There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to College Football Live.
Welcome into the Wednesday edition of College Football Live. Matt Schick along with Tom Luganville and Trevor Maddich. The confetti had barely fallen in New Orleans, and we were already wondering what next year would look like for LSU. We knew they would be without at least one critical Joe, and Joe Burrow, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. Now they're going to be down the other Joe, Joe Brady. After 1 year at LSU as the passing game coordinator, Brady will be the OC for the Carolina Panthers of the NFL, joining Matt Rhule. The 30-year-old becomes the league's youngest active offensive coordinator. So he goes from GA at Penn State in 2015 to NFL OC in 2020. And his meteoric rise was similar to that of the offense that he helped orchestrate in Baton Rouge, jumping nearly 20 points per game from the previous 5 years. And the passing yards per game more than doubled. About that, 30 points a game to nearly 50 points a game. The QBR increased dramatically. Reportedly, Joe Burrow was very good at that position. Brady was the Broyles Award given to the nation's, he won the Broyles Award given to the nation's top assistant coach. So, Tom, go to you first on this. Why was Joe Brady able to have such a huge impact in a short amount of time?
Well, I think, number one, he related really, really well to the players. I don't think there was an ego in the coaching room in relationship to Steve Ensminger or the rest of the offensive staff. It was a total collaborative team effort. And then when the players started to see what the results could possibly be, you got a total buy-in. We all know LSU's got great athletes. But really, the blend between Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady and some of the principles that he had brought and Steve Ensminger's success and longevity in the profession, you couple that with their talent pool and the fact that they saw quick results. And so it was easy for those kids to jump on board and say, hey, this guy's the real deal.
And, Tom, it also is a matter of how he used his personnel. You talk about that talent pool. To start with, he saw that he had five offensive linemen that could all pass block individually, so he could send everybody out into the patterns. Then he had receivers that could win battles deep down the field and a quarterback that could hit them. And then the most important thing was that Joe Burrow at quarterback wasn't just accurate. He knew what to do when things went wrong. He had an answer. When blitzes came, more guys than they could block, he could get the ball out quickly to the right spot. You put all that together, he had every toy he needed to play with in order to put together a prolific offense.
Well, the biggest toy, without question, was the toy that LSU will not have next season in Joe Burrow, who just had, frankly speaking, an unprecedented season at LSU, the first Heisman-winning quarterback to win the national championship in the playoff era. Six games with at least five passing touchdowns, most in a season in SEC history. 27 passing touchdowns against AP top 10 teams. Entering the season, the LSU single-season passing touchdown record overall against all teams was 28. I mentioned all those over the B-roll because we couldn't fit all the accolades on this graphic. 60 passing touchdown this year, new FBS record, 65 touchdowns responsible for, new FBS record there as well. So, Lugs, Burrow is gone. And by the way, he was a four-star recruit, top 300 prospect, and I mentioned that because there are a lot of prospects for LSU at that quarterback position that they've got or have signed that we haven't seen play yet. So who's going to replace Burrow?
Well, we've seen just a little small sample size of Miles Brennan, who was also a top player coming out. I think one of the best things to happen to Miles Brennan is that he didn't have to play a lot right away. He was able to play a little bit as a freshman, then redshirt the next year. He kind of has taken a similar path to Joe Burrow, where he is in the mix but wasn't going to take the reins, and now he's going to have the opportunity to be the other upperclassman that wasn't thrown to the fire. He's got tremendous arm talent. He's really blossomed physically over the course of the last 2.5 years. And then you've got a young true freshman that's going to be coming in Max Johnson, who's the son of former NFL quarterback Brad Johnson. So I think they've upgraded their talent pool, Trevor. But until you see a guy take the field with the live bolts flying by and maybe some different people around him, you don't know what the offense is going to quite look like.
Right. And there's the transfer portal as well that might add even more guys to compete there. In the last several years, Oklahoma has been the premier destination for transfer quarterbacks. I mean, they had two consecutive Heisman winners and then a Heisman finalist this year in Jalen Hurts, all transfers. But now with what LSU did this year, with how Joe Burrow elevated from a good game manager to an all-timer of a college passer, I think this will become a premier destination as well. And even though Joe Brady is leaving for the NFL, Steve Esminger, offensive coordinator, is still there. He's an experienced coach that'll know how to keep this thing going. And if I'm a quarterback in the transfer portal, I'm looking at LSU.
Yeah.
You get the feeling Ed Orgeron might have to prove himself all over again without Brady and Burrow. We'll see how this offense looks next season. But I want to show you guys the comings and goings, at least on that offensive side of the football. We know about Burrow. Some offensive linemen that are leaving as well. Look at who's back. You got Ja'Marr Chase, Terrace Marshall Jr., TBD, to be determined. Bunch of guys there on offense, and we don't necessarily know for sure whether or not they will be coming back to LSU. But, Trevor, I'll ask you, how good will this offense be next season?
It will be as good as the offensive line. I think at quarterback, they'll have enough competition there to be good. It won't be Joe Burrow good. That's just about impossible. But it'll still be very, very good. And with Terrace Marshall and Ja'Marr Chase back, the wide receiving corps will still be one of the best in the country. The question will be, can they trust the five offensive linemen that are there to protect the way this last group did? Two guys are gone, both guards. Center and both tackles may go, may come back. They'll have to reconstruct one way or another that offensive line group. And if that line is good, then five guys can account for as many as seven potential rushers. Let's say you have a guard, for example, who has a linebacker over him. He'll set back, see if that linebacker comes. If he doesn't, he'll go outside and see if that linebacker comes or if there's a corner blitz. And if both guards are doing that, you can account for seven blitzers if they're good enough to get the blocks made one-on-one. And that will be the limiting factor or the thing that will elevate them next year.
Well, and ultimately, Trevor, what you're talking about is championship teams are built from the inside out. And it's in the offensive front, the defensive front, and at quarterback, and you work your way out. We know they've got skill. And by the way, there were a couple of guys missing off of that list. This is a deep and talented running back group that saw an awful lot of impressive turns being taken when Clyde Edwards-Helaire had to sit on the sideline. They didn't miss a beat in their run game, particularly in the Peach Bowl. I think maybe what's more interesting than anything else with this whole dynamic is how is the approach going to change in terms of coach-to-player communication? Because LSU had a very unique situation in their press box. You know, generally you're going to have one of those two either play callers or co-coordinators. One of those guys is going to be on the field to have that face-to-face communication with your quarterback, to be that conduit between the booth. But in this situation, they were both in the booth, and they had a very, very unique process by which they would examine the previous play in the previous series and what they were going to do for the next play and the next series, and it seemed to work masterfully. So now, how does that communication work going forward, having a new quarterback, to Trevor's point, maybe having some new pieces of the puzzle up front, but they're going to have an awful lot of skill, and they're not going to sneak up on anybody this time around.
Trevor, want to hit you with this quick. Got about 30 seconds here. Do you believe, and I know it's January, right, so we'll couch it with that, but do you believe LSU is going to make the playoff next year? Do you expect that to happen, given the talent?
I do not, and it has nothing to do with LSU. It has everything to do with Alabama. Alabama lost two games this year, one to LSU by 5 points with a quarterback 2 weeks out of ankle surgery, the other at Auburn with a backup quarterback who threw two pick sixes. Lost that one by 3. And hell hath no fury like a Nick Saban team scorned. I think Bama will lay waste to everybody next year.
All right, so early predictions out for Trevor Madden. Something tells me LSU fans, they're not really focused on 2020 as of yet. Let them soak up this season. Up next, other coaching news, some controversy percolating at Penn State. Candidates to replace Matt Rhule and Joe Moorhead going to the Pac-12.
Now playing on ESPN. Saturday, it's a heavyweight college basketball matchup, followed by Lakers-Rockets in primetime. And at 10, it's the return of Conor McGregor to the UFC.
Outside of the Astros and Red Sox openings, there's another opening that could be filled very soon. ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh reporting Virginia Tech head coach Justin Fuente among the favorites to replace Matt Rhule at Baylor. Just finished his fourth season at Blacksburg. All four seasons ended in a bowl game. He has more Big 12 and Texas connections than Matt Rhule had when he was hired. Played at Oklahoma, eventually became OC at TCU, then became head coach at Memphis, included a 10-win season there. Some other candidates as well. But Trevor, who would be a good fit for the head coaching job at Baylor?
I think Fuente would be a fantastic fit because of what they need to go forward. I mean, he would bring a lot of continuation to what Matt Rhule did. What Rhule did was instill personal discipline and football fundamentals. And that's the way that Justin Fuente coaches. Now, he'll have to find a way to recruit and replace an all-timer of a defensive line led by the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year, James Lynch. But if he's able to get the players in, the culture won't change much. And the culture that Matt Rhule put in there is what really turned this thing around.
I tell you, Trevor, I think another thing that's interesting, if he's truly considering this, is, you know, what is the path to the college football playoff? And is the gap closer between Baylor and, let's just say, Oklahoma right now than it is at Virginia Tech between Clemson and everybody else? If money's equal or it's close, all right, and you have familiarity with the footprint and you're going to have the resources you need to get the job done at Baylor, which I think they will, you have a full cupboard with the instilled discipline, as you mentioned, and you may have better opportunities to truly not just compete for a conference championship, but win one right now.
I think in the last 4 years, Clemson has lost what? 4 or 5 games max. Fuente lost 20. He was 33-20 in his 4 years at Virginia Tech during that time, and that was second in the ACC only to Clemson.
Yep.
You know, the interesting thing about it is coaches are always looking to reset their clocks as well. Start over, get a new lease on life and somewhere
else. Or just go into Central Zone?
Just go someplace else. That's not what I meant, but I appreciate you.
Plus, when you see the tailgate of Bud Foster, defensive coordinator's truck, leaving town, that's a good time to follow him out.
That's true. We'll see if it's a package exit there. Speaking of which, though, it is, if Justin Fuente is the guy, again, we don't know at this point, but if he is, we just had the early signing period. Okay, the timing is not good on this at all. We saw it with Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State. In fact, Fuente just hired an assistant coach to fill out his staff this past week. Luges, you cover recruiting. You've done it for years. Do you think that players should be able to leave, that just sign with the school when the head coach is headed out the door right after the signing period?
There's one correct answer here, Luges.
Why did you do that, Matt?
I can tell. You're scratching your head.
Listen,
I can tell you're getting it.
The answer is yes. I think they should. But I also believe, you like that, Trev? I also believe that these are things that could have been implemented when this was all put into place. You know, we talk about unintended consequences. This wasn't an unintended consequence. You knew these types of things were going to happen. And that's why the devil's always in the details. What particularly bothers me about this set of circumstances, to me, the month of January is pretty drastically different than when this happens in latter November. So there's got to be some way of coming up with a happy medium here that I think protects the player, gives them the opportunities that they should have if some unforeseen circumstance presents itself, which would be the case here in Blacksburg if this happens.
Yeah, but what if half his recruiting class followed him to Baylor if he goes there? Would you be in favor of that, Tom?
No, you don't get to ask that question. You disagreed with me. What are you talking about?
Matt just dumped on you from one side. I'm dumping from the other side.
They couldn't do that. But I'll tell you why they couldn't do that. They couldn't do it because the numbers wouldn't work. Your scholarship numbers wouldn't work. And now all of a sudden you're talking about mass free agency, which I don't think anybody wants in college football without some type of legislation that's involved in it. But when you move from one school to the other, your numbers and your APR and your initials that are counted, all of those sorts of things would be impacted based upon a move.
But Tom, as a player, I'll tell you this. The head coach is kind of sets the culture, but he's not the guy that you spend most of your time with. That's your position coach and the strength coach.
Yeah.
So if I buy into a school because I love the school and I love the position and strength coaches, and then the whole thing falls apart and I'm sitting there with fresh ink on my contract, I'm thinking, hey, well, how come I'm stuck?
Yeah. Well, don't convince me. I agreed with you.
No, no, it's true. Look, yeah, they always say what? Commit to the school, not the coach. Yeah. But at the same time, we're saying recruiting's all about relationships.
Right.
So it's hard both of them to say be the same. Joe Moorhead was fired after the early signing period. He's expected to be named the offensive coordinator at Oregon. ESPN's Adam Rittenberg with that report. He was fired after two seasons in Starkville. He worked wonders with a Big Ten championship as OC at Penn State. Luges, how do you think he does in the Great Northwest in the Pac-12?
I think he'd be fantastic. I think the guy's a really, really good football coach. I think sometimes in this profession, you take the wrong job at the wrong time. Then maybe things don't necessarily pan out. You're playing with a freshman quarterback. You got some internal issues with the roster. You have a lot of injuries. It just wasn't the right fit. Joe Moorhead didn't take the Mississippi State job and all of a sudden start inhaling stupid pills. He knows what he's doing. He's a good X's and O's guy. He can coach quarterbacks, he can coach wideouts, and he's one of the preeminent RPO guys in a game that is almost entirely predicated on that element of offensive football, no matter where you go. And in that conference, oh man, I think he would light it up as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, he is an actual savant, an honest-to-goodness genius when it comes to innovating the RPO. I mean, we watch it on TV and we see the simple surface-level RPO.
Yeah.
But he takes it to different levels where he's hitting different levels of the defense vertically and horizontally, reading different guys at different times and different counters off of those. I mean, he is a flat genius on that. When he was at Mississippi State on one of my off-season tours, I spent about an hour with him on the whiteboard, and he was drawing things up that were making my head spin. And by the way, Tom, where do you get stupid pills?
Well, you get them. They magically appear. They magically appear when you start losing football games. It's amazing how that happens. They show up on your counter.
I think someone's putting something in my food without my knowledge.
Trevor, I'll fill in the gaps in you. Luges has a standing prescription at the pharmacy. Another offensive-minded coach has a new job. It's Bobby Petrino, who last coached in 2018. With Louisville. It was his second stint at Louisville. Now he's the head coach at Missouri State, the FCS. He coached Arkansas to back-to-back top 12 seasons. His head coaching career got off to a flying start at Louisville in that initial campaign after a short and unsuccessful tenure with the Atlanta Falcons, where he left the program mid-season. He went to Arkansas, and then that tenure ended when he was fired for improprieties. The coaching profession teaches us time and again, doesn't matter what you've done or what condition you left your previous employer in, someone will always be willing to hire you. Bobby Petrino, now the head coach at Missouri State. We've got a troubling story out of Penn State, where a former football player is suing the school, Coach James Franklin, and a former teammate, claiming he was subjected to hazing. Isaiah Humphreys, who was with the program in 2018, says he and other underclassmen were roughed up by teammates in a manner that was sexually suggestive. The suit says the perpetrators invoked the name of Jerry Sandusky, the former Penn State coach serving a 30 to 60-year sentence for sexually abusing boys. In a statement, the school said the university has established processes in place for responding to claims of potential misconduct. In accordance with our processes, the Office of Sexual Misconduct and Prevention and Response and the Office of Student Conduct carried out investigations of the plaintiff's claims independent from intercollegiate athletics. In addition, Penn State Police investigated related allegations and forwarded the results of that investigation to the Office of the Center County District Attorney. The DA reviewed the case and decided that no charges would be pursued. Up next on College Football Live, Tua chose the pros, and it sounds like pro scouts will have more to evaluate before the draft. We'll explain next. Three of the top 11 teams in the nation highlight our full day of Saturday college hoops on ESPN and the ESPN app. Number 10, Kentucky, facing Arkansas at 4 Eastern. And then number 3, Duke, fresh off their loss on the road at Clemson, hosting number 11, Louisville, at Cameron Indoor. Tua Tagovailoa projected to go in the top 11 picks of the NFL draft and is expected to be healthy enough to participate in a throwing workout for NFL teams. His agent, Lee Steinberg, telling AL.com that he'll hold about a 40-minute session where he'll make 60 to 80 throws in front of scouts before April's draft. Luges, what do you expect him to be able to show those scouts?
Arm talent with flat feet, because I don't think he's going to be moving very much. You know, our broadcast crew had the Citrus Bowl. We talked with Nick Saban and talked with Tua about where he is, and obviously his rehab, his treatment, he's come a long way. He moves around on both feet with the aid of a crutch, but his mobility, drop speed, plant and drive off of the back foot, all the different things that are going to go into what a true pro day type workout would be. I don't know if he's going to be that far along yet. So this may be more about stationary throws where you're 25 to 30% of actual movement within the pocket or drops or things of that nature. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing works out or how fast, Trevor, he progresses between now and whenever they'd schedule this workout.
Yeah, Tom, I agree with you about the limited nature of the workout, but I can't imagine how, if the doctors say that he's going to heal 100%, and that's a big if, can't imagine why NFL teams would need to see him throw in shorts. They've got all the tape they need of him throwing against the best competition in college football over and over and over again to NFL caliber receivers. And so from a standpoint of what he does on his pro day, I don't think it matters from a standpoint of arm talent. I think it does matter from a health standpoint. A lot of that will have to do with what the doctors say.
Yeah, maybe those doctors from a mobility standpoint are letting the young man know, hey, you could be further along than people think. And if you are, all that's going to do is be a more positive sign to be able to see you go out there and see you move around. If that's the case, that can only help him.
Meanwhile, his brother Talia, you've got Mac Jones and incoming freshman Bryce Young are competing for that starting quarterback job. Whoever gets the job will not have Najee Harris in the backfield. Will have Najee Harris in the backfield, I should say, as he decides to come back to Alabama. Some declarations today. We saw T. Higgins decide to leave Clemson for the NFL draft. Grant Delpit as well. Let's go back to Harris here. Trevor, do you like his decision to come back to school?
No. If he loves Alabama, if he wants to take care of unfinished business, great. From a business standpoint, no. He doesn't have a whole lot of what Tom Luganville calls tread on the tire, right, Tom?
Yeah.
If he goes back to Alabama, he puts some more wear and tear on his body without getting paid. I think he should go to the NFL and have next year be the first year towards that second contract because it's the second contract that'll get him the big bucks.
I'm so curious to know what he was told by the NFL because it must have been fairly significant in relationship to potential money lost, whether it's a first contract, whether it's a signing bonus, by obviously telling him he wasn't going to be a top 10 or maybe an even top 20 pick now. So he looked at that and said, hey, I've got to be able to make up that money by coming back.
Well, think about what happened in the April draft this past last season. I think Josh Jacobs was the only running back taken in the top 50 picks, and you think about J.K. Dobbins, Travis Etienne, Jonathan Taylor. I mean, Trevor, this is a deep, deep crop of running backs here. So I guess it makes sense.
But Derrick Henry at the Tennessee Titans is helping him, though, from a standpoint of his draft stock, I think.
True. College Football Live. We are back on Thursday, 4:30 Eastern on ESPN3.